Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So we are looking at the commercial real estate landscape for the week of February 5th through the 13th, 2026. And today is Friday the 13th. And, you know, I don't normally subscribe to superstition, but the market signals we're seeing right now are, they're undeniably eerie.
Eerie is a good word. I mean, conflicted is putting it mildly. What we're seeing is a historic bifurcation in how assets are performing.
That's exactly it. And that's why we're doing this deep dive specifically for the Eureka Business Group. Yeah. Because if you're an investor or a broker in a Dallas-Fort Worth market, the headlines are just giving you whiplash.
They are.
On one hand, you have this massive foreclosure of a downtown Dallas skyscraper, the National, which we have to unpack. Mm-hmm. And then at the exact same time, you're seeing articles about a grocer gold rush and retail leasing that's defying every single recessionary prediction.
It's a tale of two markets, really. You have the capital markets in turmoil, you know, reacting to these big macro fears like AI replacing office workers.
Right.
And then the fundamentals on the ground, especially in Texas retail, are tighter than they've been in a decade.
Okay, so let's structure this to cut through that noise.
Yeah.
First, we'll start with this retail renaissance and what's driving it. Then we need to zero in on Texas because the construction data is just, it's unbelievable.
It suggests we're basically the only game in town.
Exactly. Then we'll get to that distress signal, the national foreclosure, and then finally that AI scare that hit the public stocks and the a big maturity wall that's looming.
It's a heavy stack, but you really have to connect these points to understand where to deploy capital right now.
All right, let's start with that JLL report on retail, the headline number. Net absorption hit 11.9 million square feet in Q4 2025.
Which is double the previous quarter. It's a huge number.
It is. Now, on the surface, that looks like a demand story. But digging in, this feels more like a supply story to me.
It is absolutely a supply story. We've talked about this before, but it really bears repeating. For about 5 years, we just stopped building speculative retail space.
Right, because of construction costs and financing.
Exactly. So now we're at a point where vacancy is near historic lows, not just because people are shopping, but because there is physically nowhere left to lease.
Which gives landlords pricing power they haven't had since, what, 2015?
Precisely. But we need to qualify that. It's not universal. And that brings us to the K-shaped economy.
Mm-hmm.
We all know the concept, the divergence between the haves and have-nots, but the JLL data shows exactly how this plays out in tenant selection. The middle is just getting hollowed out.
You can see that so clearly in the closure data.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, department stores are just taking it on the chin. Saks, global filing for Chapter 11, closing 8 stores. Neiman Marcus closing at Copley Place.
Yeah.
So 10 years ago, losing a Neiman Marcus was a catastrophe for a mall owner. Is that still true?
Not necessarily. In fact, for a landlord with capital, getting that box back might be the best thing that could happen to that property.
Really? How so?
Well, department stores are usually on these old legacy leases paying very low rent per square foot. So if you can recapture that, say, 100,000 square feet, you are not looking for another department store. You're looking to chop it up.
Ah, right. You split it into 3 or 4 junior anchors.
Precisely. You bring in a high-end gym, maybe an entertainment concept or one of those expanding discounters. You replace one struggling tenant paying $4 a foot with 4 vibrant tenants paying 25 or 30 bucks a foot.
The math just works better.
It works much better as long as you have the capital for the tenant improvements.
So speaking of expanding tenants, the opening side of the ledger is dominated by value and luxury. You see Tractor Supply, Ross, the discounters.
That's the bottom leg of the K. They're expanding aggressively.
But then you have this other interesting trend, private clubs replacing anchors.
And that's the top leg of the K. We're seeing concepts like Park House in Highland Park Village right here in Dallas. These aren't just restaurants. They're membership-based anchors.
So they drive a different kind of traffic.
A very specific, high-net-worth foot traffic that comes multiple times a week. For a luxury lifestyle center, a private club is actually a more stable anchor than a department store because the revenue is subscription-based.
It anchors the center with a demographic that's basically recession-resistant.
Right.
Okay, let's pivot to geography then, because if you're investing in retail in 2026, the data says you are probably doing it in Texas.
Oh, absolutely. The concentration is, it's just staggering. According to the report, something like 25% of all new retail construction in the entire U.S. in 2025.
A quarter of the entire national pipeline.
Was right here in Texas, in one state.
And Dallas-Fort Worth is leading that pack.
Dallas is number one, with Houston, Austin, and Fort Worth right behind. It's that Texas triangle phenomenon. But we have to look at the driver. It's the classic retail follows rooftops story.
But with a bit of a lag, right? Because migration has slowed down.
Inbound migration is at a 20-year low, yes. It's still positive, but the flood has slowed to a stream. So the retail development we are seeing now is actually lagging that massive population boom we saw from 2020 through 2024. The houses were built 3 years ago, and the services are just now catching up.
Which brings us to the grocer gold rush. Bob Young at Weitzman coined that phrase, and it feels dead on.
It is. And it's not just that grocery stores are opening. They're acting as the primary financing vehicle for new developments.
What do you mean by that?
In this interest rate environment, you can't get a construction loan for a shopping center without a credit tenant already signed.
So HEB, Kroger, they're the golden ticket.
They're the golden ticket. If HEB signs a ground lease, a developer can get the debt to build out the rest of the center. And that's why we're seeing such a specific product type being built, grocery-anchored power centers.
And we're seeing these huge projects in the Outer Rings. North City in Fort Worth is a perfect example. A $1.1 billion project near Alliance, Texas.
And just look at the tenant mix there. It's not just retail. It's residential and heavy on entertainment. You have Andretti Indoor Karting, City Pickle USA.
So it's that live work play model, but at a massive scale.
On 300 acres. It just confirms that the center of gravity for new development is shifting out to the suburbs where you can still get land.
Fort Worth is also putting, what, $606 million into its convention center expansion?
Which is a long-term play on business tourism. They're replacing that old arena with modern exhibit space so they can compete for those big Tier 1 conventions. It shows municipal confidence.
Okay, and here's that harsh contrast we talked about at the top.
Yeah.
While Fort Worth is pouring concrete, downtown Dallas just saw a massive failure.
The National.
The redevelopment of the old First National Bank Tower into the Thompson Hotel Apartments office, a $460 million project.
And this week, it was taken back in foreclosure by the lender Starwood Property Trust.
Okay, so we need to understand failure here. This wasn't some, you know, derelict building. It's a beautiful, award-winning restoration. So why did it fail?
You have to look at the capital stack. This failure isn't necessarily because the building was empty. Although apartment occupancy did dip below 80%, which hurts. The real killer was the debt service. This project was likely underwritten when interest rates were near zero.
And they were likely carrying floating rate debt.
Exactly. When you have a floating rate loan and the base rate jumps 500 basis points, your interest payment can double or more.
Wow.
So even if the hotel is full and the apartments are leased, the net operating income, the NOI, just can't cover that new debt payment. The equity gets completely wiped out.
This just highlights the specific risk in a central business district right now. The valuation of downtown assets has just cratered.
It has. If you tried to sell the National today, the cap rate a buyer would require would be significantly higher than it was 3 years ago. A higher cap rate means a lower asset value.
And if the value drops below the loan amount?
The borrower is underwater. Starwood taking it back is simply them realizing the value of their collateral.
So this bifurcation is just critical for Eureka's clients to get. You cannot treat DFW real estate as a single thing. The fundamentals in a suburban grocery center in Frisco are completely detached from the capital markets reality of a high-rise in downtown Dallas.
That's right. One is driven by consumer demand and supply constraints. The other is getting crushed by the cost of capital and a total repricing of risk.
We're even seeing this sort of desperation in other office markets. Look at Addison. The town is giving out cash grants, $200,000 to the Landmark building, just to help them renovate older office stock.
It's basically a recognition of obsolescence. Addison has a lot of that 1980s vintage office product.
Mm.
In a world where tenants want new Class A space, those 80s buildings are becoming zombies. So the town is effectively subsidizing the CapEx needed to keep them viable. It's smart, but it shows you how hard it is to lease that commodity office space.
And if the physical market wasn't tough enough, the public markets decided to panic this week. We saw a huge sell-off in real estate stocks, CBRE, JLL, Cushman & Wakefield. CBRE dropped nearly 20% in 2 days. The narrative driving it was AI.
It's the AI scare trade. The story taking hold among generalist investors is that artificial intelligence is going to permanently kill white-collar jobs.
So fewer people means less office space, means brokerages make less money?
That's the narrative. But the irony is, it doesn't align with the current reality at all.
Not at all. While its stock was crashing, CBRE reported record revenues and beat its earnings expectations.
Their fundamentals are strong. They're diversifying into property management, data centers. It's a classic panic sell-off. investors are pricing in a worst-case scenario 10 years from now and ignoring the cash flow today.
It creates a lot of volatility, though. And it probably didn't help that JLL had that big executive departure this week.
Michael Colacino.
Right.
Appointed CEO of America's Leasing and resigned just 3 weeks later. When you have that kind of turnover at the top, combined with a stock sell-off, it just rattles confidence.
It creates a perception of instability. Okay, let's zoom out to the macro inputs that are actually controlling the math on all these deals. Inflation and the Fed.
Mm-hmm. We got the CPI numbers this week. January CPI was up 0.2%, putting us at 2.4% year over year.
So it's sticky.
Sticky is the word economists are using. Inflation isn't running away, but it refuses to go down to that 2% target.
Which gives the Federal Reserve zero incentive to cut rates aggressively.
Exactly. They held rates steady at that 3.50 to 3.75% range. But the number that really matters for commercial real estate isn't the Fed funds rate. It's the 10-year Treasury yield.
Which is sitting around 4.26%.
And that's the problem. The 10-year is the risk-free benchmark. Commercial mortgage rates are just the 10-year yield plus a spread. So with the 10-year at 4.26%, your mortgage is going to be 6, 7, even 8%.
And this leads us right to the biggest threat on the horizon, the maturity wall.
$875 billion. That is the amount of commercial property debt coming due in 2026.
Let's break that down. A lot of this debt was originated back in 2021, right?
2019 through 2021, the era of cheap money. Those borrowers are paying 3 or 4% interest right now. When those loans mature this year, they can't just extend them. They have to refinance at today's rates 6 or 7%.
So if a property is just barely covering its debt at 3% and the rate jumps to 7?
The cash flow turns negative overnight. The borrower has two choices. Write a massive check to pay down the principal, which is a cash-in refi, or hand the keys back to the lender.
Which is exactly what we just saw with the National.
The National is just the first domino of this vintage. We're going to see a lot more of this in 2026, especially in the office and non-grocery retail sectors.
But there is an opportunity here, right, for the clients of Eureka Business Group who have liquidity.
Absolutely. Distress for one owner is opportunity for another. We're about to enter a period of major price discovery. As these loans fail, lenders will be forced to sell assets to clear their balance sheets.
Because they aren't in the business of managing buildings.
Not at all. They will sell at a discount just to recover what they can.
So if we synthesize all of this for the DFW investor,
What's
the playbook?
I see three clear takeaways. First, respect the supply constraint in retail. If you own well-located retail, hold on to it. You have pricing power you haven't had in a decade.
Okay.
Second, you have to differentiate between Dallas the brand and Dallas the geography. The CBD is undergoing a painful repricing. The suburbs, especially that northern arc from Fort Worth to McKinney, are operating on completely different fundamentals.
Right, driven by population growth.
And third, watch the debt markets. The best opportunities in 2026 won't come from the MLS. They'll come from distressed debt notes and lender-owned sales.
And that is where having a broker like Eureka is critical. You need someone who knows which banks are holding which notes, which assets are about to hit the market.
You can't navigate a distress cycle with Zillow. You need inside baseball. You need to know when the foreclosure is happening before it hits the headlines.
So before we wrap up, I want to leave our listeners with one final thought on this maturity wall. We know Fed Chair Powell's term ends in May. We know the debt wall is $875 billion.
This pressure on the central bank is just immense.
So are we about to witness a generational reset? If the Fed doesn't blink and rates stay about where they are, we are going to see a massive transfer of wealth from the leveraged owners of the last decade to the cash-rich buyers of this decade.
I think that reset is already underway. The National was a signal. The only question is, do you have the dry powder to participate in that transfer?
A generational reset. It's a sobering but also exciting thought for those who are prepared. We will keep tracking these foreclosures, and the construction starts right here. Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive.